This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is really worrying because this shows that climate change has played a key role in facilitating the spread of the vector, the mosquitoes, down south. And then when people travel, naturally the virus goes along with them.
That's Raman Vilayudhan, head of WHO's Global Program on Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases, on how climate change is contributing to the spread of dengue and other diseases. Details coming up. Also, officials from South Africa's governing ANC party spent part of last week in Moscow. And influential women leaders in Zambia have joined to advocate for urgent, sustainable climate action. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The World Health Organization warns climate change is causing a global rise in mosquito-borne infections such as dengue, Zika, and chikungunya. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Arboviruses spread by mosquitoes have spread dramatically around the world in recent decades. For example, the World Health Organization reports cases of dengue fever increased from just over 500,000 cases in 2000 to 5.2 million in 2019. And the trend continues. Latest data show about half of the world's population now is at risk of dengue, the most common viral infection that mosquitoes spread to people, with an estimated 100 to 400 million infections every year. Many of them are in Africa. Raman Vilayudhan is head of WHO's Global Program on Control of Neglected Tropical Diseases. He says in South America, dengue is expanding further south to countries such as Bolivia, Peru, and Paraguay.
This is really worrying because this shows that climate change has played a key role in facilitating the spread of the vector, the mosquitoes, down south. And then when people travel, naturally the virus goes along with them. And this trend is likely to continue for the rest of the world. And we have already got reports from Sudan, which has recorded a quite high increase in dengue cases, over 8,000 cases and 45 deaths since July.
Chikungunya is a virus spread by Aedes mosquitoes, which are found on nearly all continents. The disease can cause chronic disabilities and severely impact the quality of life. MDPI, a publisher of Open Access Scientific Journals, reported there has been a new emergence and reemergence of arboviruses in Africa, including dengue, Zika, chikungunya, and yellow fever. And the WHO notes Africa experiences the most malaria cases and deaths in the world. WHO technical lead for Zika and chikungunya, Diana Rojas Alvarez, says cases of chikungunya in the Americas have increased from 50,000 in 2022 to 135,000 this year. She says the virus is circulating out of the usual endemic areas in South America and is spreading in other regions of the world.
So now we are seeing transmission where we didn't see it before. But we should be prepared to detect some cases during spring and summer in Europe and in the Northern Hemisphere, also in Southeast Asia, because the arbovirus season starts later there. It's usually when the summer season starts.
Major risk factors behind the rising number of arbovirus outbreaks around the world include climate change, deforestation, urbanization, and increased movement of people and goods. WHO experts say mosquito-borne infections put all populations at risk. However, it is the most vulnerable members of society who are most endangered. They call on countries to increase surveillance to monitor and detect the transmission of arboviruses. They urge affected communities to eliminate mosquito breeding sites in and around homes and to use mosquito repellent to protect themselves against these potentially fatal vector-borne viral diseases. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Officials from South Africa's governing party, the African National Congress, spent part of last week in Moscow at the invitation of President Vladimir Putin's United Russia Party, the URP. Some analysts say the meeting between one of Africa's most powerful political movements and Russia's biggest party shows the continent's shifting ever further away from the West. Darren Taylor reports.
Putin's scheduled to attend the summit of the BRICS countries in South Africa in August. But the International Criminal Court, the ICC, has issued a warrant of arrest for him for alleged war crimes in Ukraine. South Africa's an ICC member and is obliged by law to detain the Russian president should he set foot on its soil. The official who led the ANC delegation to Moscow, Obed Papela, says United Russia Party representatives touched on the issue.
They did inquire as to whether the security of Mr. Putin will be something that we are looking at. And at the time, the cabinet was in session where they were discussing the legal opinions that had been gathered around this warrant of arrest by ICC on Putin, and what does it mean for us? And I think the cabinet is still processing the matter. The decision to come or not to come, we leave to Mr. Putin. But obviously, they will be looking at circumstances, the situation, the developments.
Legal experts are convinced President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration has no intention of arresting Putin. It recently accused the ICC of double standards. In 2015, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Sudan's then leader, Omar al-Bashir, while he was visiting Johannesburg. But the ANC government refused to take him into custody, and he was allowed to board a plane to Khartoum. Africa analyst Sipho Mantula sees the ANC's disdain for international instruments like the ICC and frequent visits to Moscow as evidence of a new global order emerging.
We might not be certain, but come the BRICS summit in August, that the BRICS will expand. We might not even call it BRICS, it might have a new name. You have Algeria, you have Saudi Arabia, you have many countries who want to be part of the BRICS countries now that they are moving away from the so-called global order, which has been led by NATO, also by the superpowers in the UN Security Council.
Mantula says China and Russia acknowledged Africa's importance decades ago, which has left traditional powers like the United States playing catch-up. China and the former Soviet Union also supported African liberation movements when they were fighting colonial oppression. And Mantula says Africa hasn't forgotten this.
We saw it during the Ukraine-Russia debate in the UN General Assembly with the patterns of voting, but even with the patterns of engagement, where Africa is still pushing for issues around equity. They are pushing around issues of IMF debts that African countries are still embroiled in their foreign debts. It is important for Africa to reclaim and reposition its role in the global affairs.
Mantula says Beijing and Moscow are far ahead of everyone else in the race for African hearts and minds and the continent's immense resources. This, he says, is largely because of their policies of non-interference in African affairs, and their aid and loans have no strings attached.
Those BRICS countries, they are building not only friendship, but they are getting into partnership that is politically, economically and culturally. And that's where I think most of the African countries will gravitate towards, because once you have Algeria, you are pushing the Arab states into the BRICS. Once you have Kenya, you are pushing the East Africa. Once you go to West Africa for Ghana, Abuja, being part of the BRICS, then you have already dealt with this global order. And that's where...
But, says Mantula, Africa must be responsible with its new power, and any new order must benefit all Africans and humanity, not just elites. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development region has faced unprecedented challenges due to a persistent and prolonged drought marked by five consecutive below-average rainfall seasons. IGAD says in some pastoral and agro-pastoral areas of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia, people are still highly food insecure despite some recent rainfall. To find out more about the situation, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Hussein Said Indris, a researcher at IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center.
Well, as you may know, the region has experienced 5 below average rainfall season for the past 2 years. Currently, those areas that are affected by the drought are receiving a very high rainfall, particularly for the last 1 month. But still, the season is not yet over, so still expecting below average rainfall, but so far those regions affected by drought received really high rainfall events.
There are people who are concerned that there may be a risk of famine. Does IGAD believe that to be the case?
Well, yeah. Recently, the IGAD executive secretary made an appeal to government and humanitarian organizations. In his press statement, he clearly indicated that about 47 million people are already food insecure in the region. And among those, 70% are within the Kenya, Ethiopia, and Somalia. So even if the region receive a normal rainfall, still the impact of that, the past drought is huge. So there is a need for humanitarian assistance and also close monitoring of the season.
The UNHCR reports that 400 to 500 people arrive in Dadaab camp in Kenya every day, mostly driven from Somalia due to drought. How serious is that problem of getting people having to migrate because of the drought?
I'm not really involved in that part. I'm mostly working on the climate prediction component, but still we have that information. There are people migrating from one place to the other, particularly the southern part of Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya are the most affected by the drought. So the people still look for a better option. So they cross to the other part of the country and look for a better option.
In your projections now, how do you see the situation improving?
Well, our initial forecast, the one we released in February, indicates that the region is likely to experience below average rainfall. But our updated forecast shows some improvement, so it's not as bad as the earlier forecast. Still, we are expecting normal to below normal rainfall season over most parts of the region.
And that was Hussein Said Indris, a researcher at IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from Nairobi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Zambia is being hard hit by climate change, which is causing more frequent and severe droughts, flash floods, and changes in the growing seasons. But a group of women leaders in the corporate world have joined hands to advocate for urgent, sustainable climate action in Zambia. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
Zambia has joined the list of a few African countries considering innovative green financing approaches to climate change. They include trading credits from emission reduction projects or carbon trading and green bonds to finance adaptation and sustainable development projects. Green financing is a loan or investment that supports activities such as buying environmentally friendly goods and services or building environmentally friendly infrastructure. Green infrastructure is a term used to describe the network of natural spaces and corridors in a given area, including open spaces such as parks and gardens, fields, hedges, lakes, ponds, and playing fields. In the past 2 months alone, Zambia has suffered devastating floods which have destroyed key infrastructure and livestock, leaving more than 400,000 people homeless, impacting negatively on the economy. This is why the Women Leaders in Climate Change Network have come together to help women fight the problem. Most of the 100 women in the network come from the finance sector. Some are climate change campaigners who champion corporate action against the problem. The network seeks to enhance women's resilience to climate change by eliminating gender gaps in accessing climate finance in Zambia. It is also focused on raising the voices of women and communities impacted by climate change. Their group, Women Leaders for Climate Action, aims to amplify the voices and solutions of women whose lives are at risk due to changing temperatures and weather patterns. Mundia Mutumboi is one of the representatives of the group. She's also a director of market supervision and development at the Lusaka Stock Exchange. She told VOA she joined the movement because of her desire to protect the environment.
And really, I find it very easy to subscribe and commit to noble agendas that bring about transformation in the well-being of human beings and just our environments. So really, for me, passion is what makes me tick.
Mutumboi's interest in climate change was sparked by an environmental protection course she attended in Sweden.
Before I gained the knowledge and I was sensitized on issues to do with climate change, and I must give credit to the Swedish Institute Management Program that I attended in 2018. Before then, I thought this was an agenda for just a select group of people, the scientists, the environmentalists, and not accountants or financial markets players that we are.
Mutumboi and her team of leaders is advocating for green investments in the financial sector.
We now have in place a tripartite working group, and tripartite because the Zambian sector has three financial sector regulators, and so we've come together and formed this working group that now is the focal point for driving initiatives towards green financing in the Zambian sector. Around this by the capital markets players, which is the vision to position Zambia as a global green investment hub.
The group Women Leaders for Climate Action is working on initiatives to include more women advocates as well as promote environmentally friendly policies. According to the United Nations, gender inequality coupled with the climate crisis poses threats to people's way of life, livelihoods, health, safety, and security for women and girls. Women's and girls' health is endangered by climate change and disasters by limiting access to services and health care, as well as increasing risks related to maternal and child health. For VOA News, I'm Kathy Short, Lusaka, Zambia. VOA.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science, and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves 909 kHz and 1530 kHz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580, and 17530 kHz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Thousands of people in at least two towns in Ethiopia demonstrated over plans to integrate regional special forces into the police or national military. Reuters says last week's order affects the country's 11 regions, which have their own armies and the right to use their own language. However, the plan has been poorly received in the second largest region, Amhara, where special forces fired their weapons into the sky all night in protest. A media outlet run by the region's government quoted Amhara President Hilikal Kafiala as saying the order was being misunderstood as a call for disarmament of the special forces. He said it is instead a move to organize regional forces under federal security institutions. The killing of Cameroonian journalist Martinez Zogo earlier this year brought into focus the threats media face. VOA's Jackson Mfungani and Salem Salomon have the story.
Haman Mana, publisher of the Cameroonian daily newspaper Le Jour, is haunted by his last conversation with friend and fellow journalist Martinez Zogo.
He said he's scared about to be killed. He told me, when they will kill me, they will kill you too.
Zogo, managing director of radio station Amplitude FM, had been receiving death threats for several weeks. On January 17, Zogo sensed he was being followed and headed to a police station hoping for protection. He found none. Angela Quintal heads the Committee to Protect Journalists Africa program.
The gates were closed. Police would not allow him in, and he was dragged out of the car by four hooded men.
On January 22nd, Zogo's naked and mutilated body was found near Sao, a suburb of capital Yaoundé. Mana said he was so badly disfigured that his wife struggled to identify him.
The killers just leave one shoes, maybe for people to recognize the cause, because even his wife did not recognize the cause because the cause was mutilated and, you know, for 4 days after.
Police arrested several people, including media mogul Jean-Pierre Amagubalinga, whom Zogo had reported on, and members of Cameroon's DJRE intelligence agency. Known for his connections to the cabinet of longtime President Paul Biya, Balinga rose to prominence in the 1990s. Since Zogo's killing, investigative reporters have looked into allegations that Balinga used his own media empire to promote his interests and threaten critics. Now he is charged with complicity in Zogo's torture. Balinga's lawyer has denied the charges and says the arrest is unlawful. A bail hearing is expected later this month. But even with swift arrests, the killing reflects a wider concern over press freedom in Cameroon, with journalists facing harassment, arrest, and intimidation. Members of Zogo's family, too, say they are being threatened. Quintal says acts of violence against journalists are intended to silence the press.
We need to ensure that there's some sort of accountability and that those who have killed him are held to account. Because unfortunately, when you silence a journalist, you silence a journalist for good, but you also silence others around who are scared.
As police investigate Zogo's killing, advocates are pressing to ensure justice for the journalist and protection for his family. Salem Solomon with Jackson Mvunganyi, VOA News.
More than 800 couples walked down the aisles on Easter Sunday in one of the largest mass marriage ceremonies in South Africa since the outbreak of COVID-19. They were part of a mass nuptials organized by the International Pentecost Holiness Church, which has about 3 million members who believe that polygamous unions are authorized by the Bible. The events take place at Easter in December and during celebrations in September of the church's founding in 1962. Reuters says one of the ceremonies took place at the Jerusalem congregation about 62 miles north of Johannesburg. Current wives wore colorful attire, while first-time brides wore traditional white dresses. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.